everyone. Welcome to Dishing with Digest. I'm Stephanie Sloan, editorial director, here with Mara Levinsky, senior editor.
Hi, everyone.
Well, Mara, the big news this week, sending shockwaves through daytime, is Richard Gergy's dismissal from Y&R and Guiding Light favorite and Mara Levinsky favorite, Robert Newman, quickly hired as a replacement for Ashland. Now, there's a lot to unpack here. To review, Richard was cast last March in what was meant to be a short-term role, I believe, and it turned into a much bigger storyline. The show paired Victoria with Ashland and married them off in a splashy new Italian palazzo set. We named Ashland Best New Character in our Best and Worst issue, and it seemed like he had made a very solid place for himself in Genoa City. So cut to Sunday, January 9th, when Richard posted a video saying he was leaving the show. At the time, he didn't offer any details, which led to online speculation. So 2 days later, he set the record straight, explaining that he had inadvertently violated the show's COVID protocols and was let go. So it seems he contracted COVID around Christmas, quarantined for 5 days along with the CDC guidelines, and got 2 negative tests back before he returned to the Y&R set, but their quarantine period is 10 days, so he was let go. It's definitely a shame to see him go, but if you have to recast, Robert Newman is the perfect choice.
Well, to say that I concur is an understatement. You know, listen, I was really excited to see Dick Bergy back on daytime. I got to know him a bit when he was on GH's Paul. And not only is he a really charismatic actor, but he is just a straight up cool guy. You know, he's very soulful and has great stories. And I really enjoyed my conversations with him. And I thought he brought a really interesting energy to Y&R. But I am over the moon that it is Robert Newman who is taking over the role. In fact, when news of his casting trickled out to our staff, our photo editor emailed everyone, "Anyone check on Mara?" Which gave me a good giggle. I would happily watch Robert Newman play the barista at Crimson Lights. So to have him assuming such a key character just makes it all the more exciting. Now, a lot of GH fans have held out hope for years now that he might end up in Port Charles as Jeff Weber, which I definitely think would have been awesome. But Y&R is incredibly lucky to have him, and I am basically counting the minutes until his debut. Robert is one of those guys who, when I met him for the first time, my expectations were so high because he was hands down my favorite daytime actor when I was first getting really into soaps. And he was everything I had hoped he would be and more. Just a wonderful guy all around. And I know a lot of Guiding Light fans feel the exact same way I do, which is that it is just going to be so nice to have him back in the daytime fold.
Hear, hear. I mean, I feel there are so many faves from New York soaps who would be amazing additions to the West Coast shows left on the air. Mm-hmm. So I love when one of them is hired because it just brings back all the feels. Now, in other casting news, not only will we see Patrika Darbo back as Days as Nancy, but Kevin Spiritus will also be returning as her husband, Craig. So we last saw Kevin on the Last Blast reunion on the Dual app in 2019, but he hasn't been back on the network show since 2009. And there is a big storyline plan for this duo, which I think is great. Now, GH also has some big plans for Luke's memorial, and you spoke to Jacqueline Zeman, who plays Bobby, for a preview.
I did. I actually talked to her the day that Bobby found out about Luke's death on air. So I had to text her after I watched, even though we'd just been on the phone for like an hour, because I thought she did such a beautiful job in those scenes. But the memorial, which is going to air next Friday, is going to be can't miss for fans for sure, and just packed with vets. I have heard from multiple cast members who were there that Jane Elliott, who plays Tracy, really knocked the speech that Tracy makes out of the park. I mean, are we surprised? But there are going to be some surprises that take place there that we couldn't reveal in the magazine. But it's very fair to say that a rather intriguing new mystery starts to unfold that day. In our new issue, I also got to catch up with Donnell Turner, GH's Curtis, for an interview all about the big changes in his character's life in this past year, the divorce from Jordan, the new romance with Portia, changing careers from PI to club owner, the introduction of Curtis's father, Marshall. So I hope that GH fans will check that out as well.
Well, I know I will. Now, the biggest story over on Days is the double possession, and our guest today has found himself smack in the middle of it. Mm-hmm. It's Carson Boatman, who plays Johnny Demera, who is currently possessed. So let's get him on the line to chat about all things Salem and Satan. Hi, Carson.
Hey, how are you?
Good. How are you?
I certainly cannot complain. I'm doing pretty well.
That's great. We are so happy to have you on, not only because we would love to get you to know you more, but your story is pretty hot right now, to say the least. No pun intended.
Rewind. It's a wild ride.
Yes, I bet. Well, let's start with, you are an Iowa native, so tell us about your childhood and your family.
I was born in Mason City, Iowa. Lived there for about the first 6 months of my life, and then my parents moved to a small town in the southwest corner of the state of Iowa called Hamburg. That's kind of where I spent my early childhood. It's where my grandparents are from. My dad's from there. So it was a cool, you know, kind of growing up experience. I was able to become very close with both my grandma and my granddad because they lived right up the street, which is not something everybody gets to experience. So I feel very lucky to have been able to spend that much time with them at an early age. And then I believe when I was in second grade, we moved to Des Moines. My dad got a job in Des Moines. And so moved the whole family, spent the rest of my, you know, childhood and adolescence in Des Moines. As far as my family, my dad's in sales and my mom is an accountant. I've got a little brother and a little sister, Connor and Carly. Carly is almost 16 and Connor is 24, I believe.
I believe.
I think he's 25.
I hope Connor's not listening.
I hope not too.
When you look back at little Carson, do you see hints that he's going to become a performer?
I do. And it's really funny because I didn't know, consciously didn't know that it's what I wanted to do until a fairly, you know, later, I guess, in life, till I was about 19 is when I kind of was like, you know, I think I really like this. I want to take a go at it. But looking back, you know, I used to go down my grandmother used to be a school teacher. So she is all about like nurturing the creative side of children, which is so, so awesome for my brother and I and my sister to have been able to kind of grow up with that kind of influence. So my brother and I remember we'd be down in my grandma's basement. She was really good at sewing. So she'd have all kinds of, like she'd make me a Peter Pan costume or a ninja costume. And then I'd run upstairs and put on shows with my brother or, you know, play the guitar, I guess, and sing, probably sounding atrocious for my whole family. And they'd clap and yada, yada. I'd run around the house pretending I was Danny Zuko and like some black jeans and a black t-shirt sliding down the stairs. but yeah, I always did. I loved doing that as a young child. And then as I kind of got a little older, I think I kind of realized, well, it's not a very cool thing if I'm dressing up and playing make-believe. I can't be in with the cool crowd if I do those types of things. So I think, you know, just naturally I kind of went from there into sort of more interested in playing sports and, you know, hanging out with my friends, but never ever have lost the love of going to see movies and hear music and write music. So I think, yeah, it's always been there. I just didn't kind of realize it until I was about 19 or 20.
Mm-hmm. Well, what kind of student were you?
A horrible one. I would not recommend any person take advice from me when it comes to schooling or prioritizing your time. When it comes to school, my feedback was always the same at like parent teacher conferences. It was always like, yeah, he's a good kid and he's nice, but he just doesn't ever do his homework. And he doesn't seem to like school at all. And that's kind of, I feel like how it was, you know, I really didn't like any class. I gotta be honest, I hated it. I got through it barely. And then went to a year of community college. Hated that equally as much. Except for there, you don't have anybody making you get up and go to school every day. So I found that I was actually failing some classes in college because I just didn't go.
That's how that works. Yeah.
So, you know, I had the opportunity to come out here to LA. I met a manager and she said, hey, if you moved out to LA, we'll rep you. And I said, sure. When do I leave?
Right. Okay. Well, let's get back into that a little bit. So you actually had an agent somehow while you were in community college. I have read.
Yes.
So how did that come about?
So I had an agent by the name of Steve Myers with the Peak Agency in Des Moines. And you know, I'd book random, you know, cable commercials, you know, like a cable company or a photo shoot, you know, and make $200 or $300 here and there just to kind of pass the time and make some extra cash. But he hit me up and he said, hey, every year the agency does this. We go to New York and it's basically a talent scouting type of thing. So, you know, he was like, I only ask, you know, a few people. I think if it's something you want to do, you might have a good shot at it. Let me know. And so I went cause I didn't have anything else going on. And, I went and, it ended up going pretty well. Met a few agents and managers, ended up signing with one of the managers there, and moving out to LA shortly after.
Well, what was that transition like for you? And also, how did your parents feel?
you know, it was kind of a wake up call. My parents, I think, as supportive as they are of me, never have really loved the fact that I, you know, don't have a 401k and health insurance and stuff that comes with being an actor. And so, you know, they were wary, but they let me do it, which in hindsight, I probably thought they were being very negative about it and not supportive. But looking back from now to then, just the fact that they didn't say, no, absolutely not. You're not doing that. You're going to get your grades up and you're going to go work for whatever. So they weren't thrilled, but they let me do it. My dad, actually, I drove out from Iowa to LA with my dad. And then he helped me kind of unpack into my apartment, my first apartment on my own in North Hollywood. My mom came out on a plane a couple days later, just kind of helped me get situated. And I will never forget, they were there for, I don't know, 5 days. And the day that they left, I said bye, probably, you know, smiled and waved. And then I watched them drive off. I went straight into my apartment and I laid on the floor and cried for like 2 hours. Cause I was like, what have I just done? I don't know anybody here really. Wow. I don't know, you know, coming from Iowa, hearing about LA, it's like, you think everyone's going to rob me or mug me, you know, it's like the big city. So I didn't know any difference. So it was definitely it was getting thrown into the deep end of life and culture, I think. So there was an adjustment period, but at the end of the day, some of my best friends I'll have for my entire life I met out here, whether it be an acting class or at a job that I had, you know, so I'm really thankful for the experience.
Do you feel like you had a real idea of what it would take to try to get a foothold into the industry?
Again, no, not at all. Not even a little bit. you know, you hear people say it's really hard. It's really, really, really hard. It might take 10 years. It might, you know, some people don't make it till they're 50. And me, you know, 19-year-old, I thought I don't think I ever was an arrogant person, but I was confident in myself. And in my mind, I thought, yeah, a year and a half, 2 years, I'll be on a show. It's going to be great. You know, I'll be a millionaire by the time I'm 25. This is incredible. And I remember turning 25 and just thinking, what have I done with my life? You know, like, what did I, oh no, what did I do? It's too late now. Like, you know, I'm just, I've messed it all up. But I think with that, I was kind of like, well, I'm here. I'm as they say in poker, I'm pot committed now. So I can't leave the table until I hit it big.
Right.
So I stuck it out and lo and behold, about 9 years, almost 10 years into living in LA, I booked days.
Wow. Well, did you have a day job in the beginning or several to support yourself?
Several. Yeah. My first job out here was working at the front desk at the Equinox in West Hollywood on Sunset. That was a cool job. For me, it was like I could get a free gym membership. In my mind, I was like, oh, there's lots of directors and agents that work here, that work out here, so I'm going to meet, you know. That was kind of in the back of my mind, but it was a small paycheck and a free gym membership, and that's kind of all I needed at the time. And then I remember I was feeling really homesick. I'd been in LA for, I don't know, 6 or 9 months, hadn't seen my family, and 4th of July rolled around, and my grandpa has a lake house at the Lake of the Ozarks. And that's kind of something that we've done every year, is just go to the Ozarks and hang out with family and celebrate the 4th of July. And I asked for it off and they didn't give it to me. And I was like, I'm going. So I went, came back to being jobless. What happened then after that? I think I met, this sounds horrible. I met a girl and I think I just lived, like I kind of was just living with her for a while.
Big mooch.
Yeah. Not really being, I would say, overly supportive. As far as the finances go, that ended. And then I got a job busing tables. I worked construction in Santa Clarita for a little while. I did some bartending on the side. I did some personal training on the side. I waited tables at this restaurant called Isabel. It's on like Fairfax and Santa Monica. And then the last job I had before I booked days was probably my favorite job. I was basically a private driver / personal assistant for this architect who lives here in LA. Super great guy, really awesome job. And then, you know, COVID hit and lost that job and then moved. Sorry, all these answers are so long-winded. I just wanted to call it ahead of time. After that, I moved to Nashville with my then fiance because just it was getting so expensive to live here with no job. And so moved, thought, you know, I'm kind of done being an actor. I'm about to get married. I got to find a better way to support, you know, my family that I'm about to have. This just is not panning out for me. So moved to Nashville just because it was cheap. There was really no rhyme or reason, you know, just like that sounded like a cool place to go. And then about 2 months in Nashville, I get a call after a couple of auditions and meetings that I booked days. Immediately back to the day my parents left, immediately started crying. And they're like, cool, we need you in 2 weeks. So after selling everything that we had and that we owned in Los Angeles, and driving the rest to Nashville, getting a house, just unpacked about the last box. Hey, you got to be back in LA in 2 weeks. So we sold everything that we just bought in Nashville. Packed all the boxes back up, stuck them in a car, and drove back to Los Angeles. And then I've been filming days ever since.
In addition to pursuing acting, music was also on your radar. So tell us about the music part of your creative pursuits and where it began.
Yeah. So moved out to LA to be an actor at 19. Always, you know, enjoyed singing, liked to do it. Figured, hey, you know, if I ever have an audition for a show like Glee or Nashville, this could be a useful tool that I have. Never was it at the forefront of my mind, I want to be a singer or a musician. But just, it kind of kept circling back. The music industry did. I'd meet someone here and almost do something really cool and then not do it and then meet someone there and do the same thing. And then I did a cover with a friend of mine who had a decent YouTube following, and he asked if I wanted to like feature on one of the verses of this One Direction song he was going to put out as a cover. So I did it, not knowing that Island Records was looking at him to potentially, you know, for more or less cast in this boy band that they were putting together called Citizen Four. They happened to see that video, brought him in for an audition. While he was in the audition, they got my info from him and then gave me, I got some random call at like 8 a.m. I was still asleep, didn't answer. Number called again, didn't answer. I thought it was, you know, because there's all those telemarketing calls that just right. show up. And then I hear a buzz that a voicemail was left. So I pick up, or I listen to the voicemail. It's like, hey, this is Sam Waters. I'm the senior vice president of A&R at Island Records. Yada, yada, yada. I was like, oh, my, you know, like trying to like make my voice sound like I didn't just wake up. And I called back and I was like, hey, what's up? Yeah, how's it going? I'm Carson. Yeah, I saw you called. Sorry, I just got back from the gym. I've just been working out. I didn't see your then they had me in for an audition and ended up getting brought into the band, and we were still looking for one more. And so I thought, well, I have a little brother who could, he can sing. He's going to school at Iowa State right now. Kind of the same thing as me, not really loving it or doing so hot. And they auditioned him, you know, over Skype and then in person. And then, you know, we both, what we thought was like the coolest thing ever, ended up signing a, you know, a major, a record deal to a major record label.
Wow.
Which was cool. And I definitely don't have any regrets, but I would say if there's one industry I would be very cautious to ever dive back into fully, it would be the music industry. It's very, as is the, you know, the entire entertainment industry as a whole, but I think there was a lot of sugar coating and, promises made that, you know, we all were kind of, you know, counting on it and didn't end up happening. And then a couple of years later we got dropped, never really ended up getting paid any money, or any real money, but, it didn't pan out. Mm-hmm. And kind of ended up, that's right after that, I started working for the driver. But pretty much the whole time through that, being a signed act to a major label, I'm still waiting tables on the side, you know, like it's just not everything that it sounded like it was going to be, mm-hmm. Which is fine because I think it was an incredible learning experience. And met a lot of people who I still love and trust as friends and mentors to this day. But that just didn't happen for us.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I gotta say, if your boy band dreams get dashed, I think it's probably good that you've never really had them to begin with. You know, yeah. That you kind of plucked into that situation in a way. Yeah.
That is exactly right, Mara. You know, it's like any 21-year-old kid. It's like, hey, you want to sign a record deal and be a millionaire? Yeah, I totally do. That sounds great.
Right, twist my arm.
Pen and paper. Let's sign it now. So it's, you know, it just seemed like an opportunity that couldn't be passed up at the time. I certainly wouldn't have ever envisioned myself being in a boy band though. So it probably is for the best.
I listened to your single Name in Your Phone. It is a bop, might I add.
Thank you.
And you wrote this with some like serious heavy hitters, including Sam Salzer, who happened to have a little bit of a hit in Lizzo's Juice. Like, how did you meet him and start writing with him?
He's been a friend for a long, long time. I've known Sam for long. I don't even know, 8 years maybe. Cool story behind it. So I had some other friends who were in another boy band and he was kind of producing some songs for them. And he and I met and wrote a couple songs together then, and then kind of lost touch, ran into him at a Grammy party a few years later and kind of reconnected, fell out of touch again. And then ran into him again at a Brett Young concert at the Hollywood Bowl. And he was just like, hey man, you know, things are starting to like do really, things are starting to like really pick up for me. Like I'm working with some cool people. If your boy band ever doesn't work out, you know, let's try and figure something out together. And like 3 weeks later we got dropped. I'm literally at my manager's office, or at my manager's house. He's telling us, you know, we're in the meeting getting dropped. And I said, oh, can you excuse me for 2 seconds? I have to go outside for a minute. And middle of the meeting, I go outside, I call Sam, I'm like, hey, Sam, I'm getting dropped right now. Do you still want to work together? Because I was like, I don't want to leave this meeting without knowing I've got something else, you know, starting at least. And so we wrote a bunch of songs together and really have only released like 3 or 4, I think. We've got a lot of really good ones, but again, it's a lot of, especially now being on the show, it's so much energy and time to make a song be successful. Like you said, Mara, Name in Your Phone. I also think it's a pretty good song. But it's got, I don't know, maybe 500 streams. I haven't even checked it. It's because you just have
to get more now.
Yeah, I hope so. It's just, you got to be on TikTok now if you want to be. And I'm like, I can't grasp TikTok, nor do I necessarily want to. Not bashing it. It's just not for me. It's not, mm-hmm. You know, I can barely run my Instagram. I just like to, for me, it's like music now is like, it's fun. And it would be so great if I put a song out one day and it, poof, that's great. I'm not going to ever try to avoid success, but I just don't think it's where I want to be putting all my energy right now. Mm-hmm. I'm really loving being on the show, and I'm super happy to kind of see my acting career start to blossom and unfold. And I just want to nourish that as much as I can.
Mm-hmm. Well, on a personal front, you had only been in LA for 3 years when your gym trainer set you up with another one of their clients, your now wife, Chulana. So tell us about your love story.
I met her through a trainer that we both had at Crunch on Sunset and Crescent Heights, Layla. We both had just started at Crunch. Chulana had just moved to LA. And from what I've heard from her side is that Layla was trying to set her up with all of the, like the trainer guys at the gym. And she wasn't really feeling it. And I guess, she had maybe was just finishing training me or something. And Julana was coming up and we just kind of a quick, hey, how's it going? I'm Carson. Oh, hi, I'm Julana. You know, we both have the same trainer. Yada, yada, yada. And I remember thinking, wow, she's really cute. And I guess Julana thought the same. And so it was very, very junior high. My next session, I go in and Layla's like, hey, come back to my desk for a second. I want to show you something. And she pulls up Julana's Instagram. She's like, hey, do you think this girl's cute? And I was like, yeah, that's the girl from last week, right? Yeah, she's really cute. I thought she was cute. She's like, well, she thinks you're, you know, she likes you too. And I was like, oh, she does. That's cool. Does she want to go on a date or anything? Would she be interested in that? And she was like, I don't know. You'll have to ask her. Here's her number. So I got her number and I think I texted her thinking, wow, I'm really cool. I'm super sly. I texted her, sushi ? And I, with no context, I don't even know if I told her who I was. And I think she said, who is this? I was like, it's Carson from the gym. Layla gave me a number. And we went to get some sushi. And then, you know, we just became kind of good. You know, we became friends for 6 or 7 months. And then I remember we were like watching Game of Thrones at her place. That was kind of like a thing that like bonded us at the beginning. We got super into Game of Thrones and we watch it every night. But I remember just looking, like laying there next to her and looking over at her being like, what? And I was like, what do you mean? What? She was like, well, I know what I'm thinking. What are you thinking? And I was like, verbatim. I said, okay, here's the deal, Julana. I love you. And she was like, oh, I love you too. And then, from then on, we just, been pretty inseparable. And now she's my wife and couldn't be happier about it.
Aww. That's awesome.
What a terribly unromantic, unadorable story. tell us about the proposal, which I think also had a musical twist to it.
It did have a musical twist to it. So I called up Sam when I realized I wanted to propose. I was actually in, I'll tell you a quick story about proposing about what led up to it. I was in Nashville. It was before we moved there. It was in July of 2020, I guess. I was in Nashville doing some writing sessions and hanging out with some friends for, I don't know, eight or so days, taking some meetings. Cause I think we had decided, okay, we want to move to Nashville soon. So I went out and tried to just kind of, I looked at some houses and took some meetings with some people and whatever. And I was with a buddy of mine and he was having some problems with his relationship and we're having a little fire in his backyard. And everything he would tell me, I kept coming back with a response. Well, with Julana and I, we do dot, dot, dot. And I kept saying, well, with Julana and I, and this works really well. And I'm like coming to the realization as I'm giving him advice, oh, I should marry her. You know, she should be my wife. And so the next day I wasn't planning it, but I was getting coffee with another buddy of mine. And I looked two doors down from where this coffee shop was in this trendy, like the Silver Lake of Nashville, if you will. It was a little kind of mom and pop jewelry shop. And so I went in there freshly paid by the government with my $900 weekly check. And I walked in there. I said, hey, I'm looking for a ring. I would like a nice ring for a good price. And they said, cool. These are some nice rings for some good prices. And I said, cool, that one looks good. Bought it, asked around to a couple of her friends to get her ring size, and then called Sam because Sam lives in Nashville now. And I said, hey, I'm going to propose to Julana next week at the Ozarks for the 4th of July. So this must have been June. Can you help me put a song together? And then at the end of the song, when the music cuts, I'm going to go into, you know, a 45 to minute long speech telling her, you know, how much she means to me and kind of just cover our story together and then ask her to marry me. He was like, yeah, cool. When do you want to do it? Come over to the studio. We'll set up time. So did it. It was actually my mom's birthday. It was July 3rd. We were at the Ozarks and I said, hey, you want to go on a walk? Let's go down on the dock for a little while. Let's just sit and watch the water. And we're kind of watching the water, watching the boats go by, and I said, oh, hey, I got a song back from Sam. I haven't heard it yet. Do you want to take a listen and tell me what you think? And so I had, you know, I was prepared. I had the phone and the air and the headphones. And so I said, put these in your ear and listen to this song. And she did. And, you know, 3 minutes goes by and she's just sitting there. I can see that she's a little, you know, confused or shocked or just very silent and like deadpan straight ahead. And I was like, is it over? Are you still, is it over? You know, she was like, yes, it's over. And so I got down on one knee and gave her a ring. Then we started, I think my mom was like planning the wedding, like as I was proposing already. So she had already got a jump start on that. And we got married about a year later, July 23rd of 2021, mm-hmm. back in Iowa.
I feel, have you and Lucas ever discussed your proposal stories? Because he has a similar one with Shelby that it took place at like her parents' cabin or something, which is very nice.
I love Lucas and Shelby. They're great.
Yeah. Okay. So it was during your bachelor party that the role of Johnny started coming into play. So tell us about your casting story at Dane's.
As I tell all these stories out loud, I realize how like random my life has been. But it doesn't feel that way. It feels like I've been like trying to do the same thing for so long. So it doesn't seem random, like close up, but far out, I'm like, wow, that's a little interesting. Anyway, I was in Colorado with some of my closest friends, many of whom are actors that I've met out here or other places. And I had booked out with my agents. I'd already moved to Nashville, which my manager knew, but he said, don't tell your agents that you moved to Nashville. Everything's self-taped anyway. There's no need to, you know, give them any reason to not be submitting you. And so I didn't, but I booked out. I said, I'm going on my bachelor trip. And, you know, it's like 10 a.m. on a whatever day in Colorado. We were just, you know, having some early morning libations before going about the day, as you do on a bachelor party.
Or any party.
Yeah. So, you know, feeling pretty loose, see this audition come through. I'm like, come on. Like I said, I'm here. Like I'm trying to go skiing and hang out with my friends.
Let me live.
Huh?
Let me live.
Yeah, let me live. Haven't seen an audition in 2 months. Now you send me 6 on my bachelor party. Classic. My agents are great.
That was a great audition for the role. Yes. Frontal client.
Yeah, artists and representatives, best agency out there. So happy. I love you guys if you're listening. But this audition comes through, you know, I'm mostly sober, I would say. And I had a friend, one of my best friends, Tanner Stein, who's an actor as well. And I said, hey, dude, I know it's annoying, but it's for days. And I've gone in for days so many times. I've kind of built up a relationship with Marnie, the casting director, and don't want to have that relationship change or let her down in any way. So I'm like, I have to do this audition. We have to do it before we do anything else. So he's like, fine. I've got 7 other friends in the background. Hurry up, which is exactly what you want when you're trying to do a good self-tape. It's really good to have that extra impatient pressure. And we do it. I was a little chubby, you know, I put on, you know, 15 pounds or so, you know, at the beginning of COVID. My hair was long. I didn't shave because I didn't bring a razor on the trip. And I had like perfect, like just red, but where my goggles had been, light, you know, from the sun and wind. And the role said it was like incredibly handsome 19 to 22 year old, you know, male. Open ethnicity, as that's what breakdowns say. And I did my slate and I was like, hey guys, how's it going? I'm Carson. Thanks for having me in again. By the way, I promise I'm super handsome and good looking, but just not right now. And if you cast me, I promise I will be. Also, I have whiskers because I couldn't shave, but I'll shave. And then I proceed to do the audition in the worst lighting in the cheapest Airbnb we could find. Just no sunlight, just you know, those like just dark yellow lights just coming down overhead. And do it a couple times, send it in, don't hear anything for like 2 weeks. I was like, I'm sure that probably wasn't my best work. I can't imagine. I wouldn't be surprised if I don't get a call back. Another week goes by, I get a call from my agent. Hey, congrats. You got a call back for days. I was like, great. That's amazing. I had COVID-19 back in Nashville. Julana was in LA working on a job. So it was me and my dogs. And I was sick as a dog. And Marnie, the casting director, they're like, Marnie wants to have a FaceTime with you before, like the day before your call back. She FaceTimes me. We do a quick little catch up and then she goes, okay, so I don't know. I'm going to paraphrase. I don't know what the heck was wrong with your audition, but that was the worst heckin' audition I've ever seen in my life. Like what was that? You're lucky to be getting a call back, you know, just giving it to me straight. She was like, you got a call back because I didn't even have you in the callback thing. Somebody else asked about you, so I brought you back into the pool. You're really lucky. Don't blow this tomorrow. And so I was just, you know, I was trying to really prepare, just chugging water, like trying to like clear my nose because I couldn't even hardly breathe. I was so sick and just my throat was all messed up, but I was like, for 10 minutes on a Zoom, you can make this work, Carson, just make it work. So I did the audition, got like a thumbs up, and then didn't hear anything for another 2 or 3 weeks. I was like, yeah, well, I definitely blew it. I blew it now. I know I did. Oh, Carson, you idiot. And then my agent calls, hey, congratulations, Day's liked your callback. They want you to come into the studio and do a screen test. And I said, okay, cool, Adrian, thanks. By the way, I live in Nashville. So it's going to be, is there any way we can get me there? Because it was like in 2 days they wanted me to be in the studio. And I was like, can we figure out a way to get me from Nashville to LA? And he was like, yeah, sure. Let me see. And then Days was gracious enough to fly me out and put me up for a day. Did the screen test on a Friday. Hung out in LA, saw some old friends on a Saturday. Flew home Sunday. Monday morning, Marnie called, said, hey, you have to act surprised when your agents call you, but I just wanted to be the first person to tell you, it's gonna, you booked Days. And so that was very, it was a very happy, emotional moment for me.
Mm-hmm. So I remember reading in your first interview in Soap Opera Digest that you cried. You know, talk to us about what that emotion was. And I'm now misty-eyed, feeling your emotion again.
You and me both. I'll never forget it. And it was just a feeling of, honestly, just relief was the first feeling I felt, more than excited, just relief. Because for years now, I had been for 7, 8, almost 9 or so years, been, you know, for lack of a better term, struggling financially, definitely. You know, just staying just enough above float to keep, you know, from going down. But never was I, you know, ever killing it by any means. So just the relief knowing like, wow, I don't have to be scared at the end of every month anymore because my rent's due and I don't have it. You know what I mean? Like I don't have to, and I can now Juana doesn't have to work so much because, you know, just all those thoughts coming over me and then after all the kind of thoughts and feelings of relief came feelings of like, yeah, wow, I did it. I'm good enough. You know, I've been so close so many times, but and just the triumphant thoughts of I'm good enough to be doing this, you know, kind of it justified the last 9 years of struggle. And then I called my parents and then my agents called me and it was just, it's definitely something that changed my life for the absolute better. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, now we know that your mom is a big Days fan. So how did she react not only to hear that you were even auditioning again for the show, but that you now were going to be on the show and part of two pretty huge families to boot?
Yeah. She was excited. You know, the whole auditioning thing, letting her know about that, she after a couple of years, she kind of was like, anytime I'd call her about an audition, as anybody would be like, yeah, cool, great. Oh yeah, another audition. That's great. Cool. So she wasn't maybe as excited about the audition, but as I started getting closer and closer, she would be like, well, what's your character say? And I was like, I don't know. It's like, it says it's very vague and they don't want us to know, but I think like his dad's like a crime guy and they don't have a good relationship. And she was like, ooh, so you're either, I bet you're a Demera or maybe you're a Kiriakis, but probably a Demera. And so she's like helping me speculate who this character is so I can get a better feel of how to play it when I go in for the screen test. And, but I called her, her and my dad were on their first vacation together in I don't know how long. Because they have a, you know, at the time a 14-year-old daughter that plays soccer every single day and every single weekend. So they just are always, everybody's always calling them for something. And they were in Florida, I think. And I called my mom and I heard my dad in the background. He goes, can't we get 15 minutes to ourselves without one of our kids bothering us or something like that? And I was like, oh, sorry to bother you. I just wanted to let you know I booked days. And I think they both were kind of in shock too, because they were both just very kind of deadpan, like, no, you didn't. You did? Did you really? You know, just that. And it was a very funny conversation.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty incredible. Okay, yeah. So tell us about your first day now, coming in to actually be a Demara, as your mom predicted.
Yes, she was correct. I was very nervous. I was very, very nervous because I was thinking, you know, I'm the new guy on a show where people have been on it for 40 years. You know, they all know each other. It's, you know, I thought for sure I was going to be like an outsider because they've had all this time to develop these, you know, on and off screen relationships with each other. And I just wanted to do a good job so that I didn't get fired. That was kind of my main thing. For my first couple months on the show, I was like, don't do anything to get fired. Just do a good job. Know your lines. But I showed up and it was the total opposite. I showed up, I think it was Jess, who is one of the ADs on the show. She was like, hey, Dan Fiergal wanted me to let you know he left his number up here for you. You can give him a call if, you know, he's going to be playing your dad. You can give him a call if you want to run lines or anything like that. And that immediately I was like, oh, that was just a very, you know, it made me feel very, a lot more comfortable, a lot more like, okay, it's not so closed off. Like people are opening themselves up and, you know, at least one person is. And it turns out everybody is that way. I mean, this, every single person on the show, they're so incredible. Like it's so much fun. We really are all like a one big family. We do things together outside of filming. We have a lot of fun while we are filming, but the first day, I'm sure if I went and looked back at it, I probably looked super stiff on screen. I was very, very nervous, but also, you know, kind of, I think knew I've been, maybe not been on a show ever really, but I've been being an actor for almost 10 years. So I had that at least to take comfort in. Like, I know how to do it. It's just a matter of don't let the nerves overcome you.
Well, as Johnny, you are the son of EJ and Sammy, two very important people. Yes. Within the framework of Salem. So tell us what it has been like, in addition to Dan, to working with Allison Sweeney and Dan.
So much fun. Dan and I have a great time. We always have a lot of fun filming. I didn't work with Allison until, I'd probably been on the show 5 or so months or something like that before I actually had scenes with Allison. That was, for me, was kind of like my first day all over again, because she's like on the show, it's like she's this mythical character, you know, because she goes away for a while, then she comes back, and when she comes back, it's like all about that, and it's very dramatic and very important. And then she goes away, but she comes back, and then we're all there with her again. And so I was like, man, she has just been on the show for a long time. She's been one of the faces of the show for 30 years. So there was an intimidation factor there, for no reason, because she was so encouraging and so sweet and so helpful, as she always is through every scene. I think it was just, it felt kind of surreal because I can remember seeing her on TV growing up, you know, like she, for some reason, she stood out to me for some reason, whenever I was watching it as a young kid. So it was just felt very like, I shouldn't be here right now. But I am, so I guess I just better do this.
Well, something fun is that you have a twin sister on the show.
Yes.
She is played by Ms. Lindsay Arnold. So tell us about your off-camera dynamic with her.
Again, so much fun. We give each other a hard time. I think she gives me a harder time than I give her. But I love her to death. Like, she's my own sister. I really do. I would do anything for her. I think she'd do anything for me. And just the relationship that we've been able to develop over the course of this last 9 months has been really, really important to me and meaningful. And I hope the same for her. I remember the first scene, I think my first day I had scenes with her. And immediately, like she and I both talked about it, like right after the scene, there was just kind of like an immediate, sometimes you just have that connection. It's like, oh, we connect, you know, on some level we connect, and it's really cool. Mm-hmm.
Well, Johnny is Marlena's grandson, which puts you in the orbit of Deidre Hall, her portrayer, as well as Drake Hogeston's John, who your mom had a big crush on. So tell us what it's like to work with the two of them.
It's doing a lot. You guys are airtight.
We do our homework.
Yeah, you do. You know, it's so, I'm going to start with Drake. Drake is I've never met another person like Drake. I don't think he's on, and I mean this in the most respectful way. I don't want to step on anybody's toes, especially Drake, if you're listening, not toe stepping, but he's like the quintessential grandpa that everybody loves, you know, like, and that's who he is in real life. He's got so many stories, and he's had the craziest life. I'm sure you guys know his story. Mm-hmm. He has had the craziest life, and he's got a story for everything, and it's 20 times better than any story you've ever heard. And he's just so committed to his work, and he's so helpful in any way that he can be. The running joke around set is that Drake is one of the prop guys, because we're not supposed to, like, I don't know why, but we're not supposed to, like, if there's a table it has to be moved, we're not supposed to do it, probably for you know, liability reasons. And Drake always gets in trouble because when they're like, hey, can we move it, Drake, like, oh yeah, sure, and he'll just grab it and pick it up. And everyone's like, no, Drake, stop. And he's like, well, it's done now. that's my two cents on Drake. Deidre Hall, again, just probably, I was just saying the other day, probably one of the, if not the most iconic actors and characters in soap opera history ever. And that is not without reason, because she carries herself with such grace. And if I had to use one word to describe her, I would say thoughtful. She's very, very thoughtful. You can see that she puts a lot of thought into the way she speaks to others and the way she handles situations. And not only that, but she's thoughtful in the way that I wasn't expecting it at all. But we got, you know, a couple weeks ago over the holidays, Juwan and I got a Christmas card from Deirdre, handwritten, tailored specifically to our, you know, conversations that we've had and our relationship. And it's just like, how do you do that? You know, like, she has so many more people and fans in her life than most actors hope to, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But she finds the time to write a note. And that was really special to me and special to Juwana. And, you know, another example, the last day before we all left for the holidays, she had cupcakes brought in for everyone, you know, just very thoughtful, just, and I think that's very of that generation. You know, I think young people like myself and people younger than myself can take a lot away from just that type of consideration for others. Mm-hmm. That maybe we don't necessarily, you know, growing up learn or at least implement the way that it used to be implemented.
Because people are too busy on TikTok, Carson.
They are too busy on TikTok. You're too busy, you know, going to Tulum.
Okay, now Johnny was pretty instantly smitten with Chanel. Tell us about working with your leading lady, Raven Bowens.
I hate watching any scene between Raven and I because she's so good. She makes me look bad because she's so talented and it drives me nuts. She's great. Again, instant, you know, instant chemistry, very, you know, it's always complicated with sometimes having a love interest, especially when you have a wife, you know, who also watches the show, and Raven respectively has a boyfriend as well. So, you know, I think the first thing that Raven and I kind of talked about after getting acquainted with each other was like, let's go over, I want to know like ground rules for any intimate scenes that we may be having in the future. And we kind of just kind of laid down the law, and after that, we've just been really good friends. Like, she's my buddy. Like, we're constantly shooting texts back and forth about what, a tweet that we see about Johnny and Chanel or whatever it is, you know. But she is an incredible actress. She's a great friend. And I really like working with her. I'm interested to see what her future holds as far as her career goes, because she really is like, she's up there as far as the talent level is concerned.
Mm-hmm. Well, we definitely saw that on display, as well as your own in recent scenes where those little newlyweds, it all went crazy. Now, Johnny was the catalyst for the possession story, really, because of the movie that he was making about his mother's life that turned into the possession story. Yeah. So first of all, tell us about hearing about the possession story. When did you know that Johnny was going to be possessed? And talk about those yellow contacts.
Okay, we'll do all of those things. The first time, I didn't know that I was going to be the devil until pretty recent, like until very recently before I became the devil. I got a call from Marisa. I was standing in my kitchen actually talking to Julana, and I got a call from Marisa, who is the head of hair and makeup. And this was when we were kind of like in the height of Marlena's possession story. And nobody kind of knew what, they keep it very under wraps to us. Like I don't know what's going to happen in 2 weeks. You know what I mean? They keep it very on the down low, even for us. So I get a call from Marisa. She says, "Hey, do you wear contacts?" And I was like, "No, no, Marisa, I don't." She was like, "Okay, cool. Well, there's a place," she gave me the name of the place and the address. She was like, "If you could, there's an appointment for you to go in there at 11 on Monday to go get fitted for some." And I was like, "Marisa, am I going to be the devil?" She was like, yeah, I think you're going to be the devil. It's just going to be for a while. And I was like, "Okay, cool. Sounds good. Can you tell me anything else?" She was like, "No. No, I can't. Just make sure you go to your appointment on Monday." And like a week and a half later, I was playing the devil.
Wow.
Amazing. Amazing. Yeah. And is it fun?
I think it's a blast. It's like, it's just, you get to do things as an actor, because I feel like you have to fall in love with your character if you want to do a good job playing it. And so for me, having Johnny being possessed, it's like I can do as an actor pretty much whatever I want. I can treat people however I want, and I can be the bad guy and get to show that side of my own craft without the character of Johnny having to take any credit or blame for the bad deeds. So it's kind of best of both worlds. I get to have my cake eat it too. I kind of get to jump back and forth between good guy and bad guy, which is a really fun challenge.
Mm-hmm. Well, tell us about wearing that fabulous red suit for the big scenes where Johnny dumped Chanel.
Yes, those scenes, the suit. I am still not convinced as to whether that is a suit made of garment or a suit made of latex. It is so tight. It is so tight. The pants, I actually was telling you guys earlier, actually I think it was before you hopped on, Mara, but I was saying that they were so tight that I couldn't actually even bend over to tie my own shoes without risking that the pants would rip. And Richard, in the wardrobe department had to they had to sew the pockets shut because they were just popping out. So you know, the tight pants. And the shirt, I couldn't. It was so tight that once I tied the tie, I couldn't get my hands up behind my neck. So Dan, we have rooms across the hall from each other. He had to come over every day that we were shooting in that suit and like flip my collar back over my tie. And then I'd take a deep breath and I would just hold my breath the whole scene because it was impossible to get air. But hey, it looks good.
Look great. It looks
good. And that's what matters. Beauty is pain.
That's right.
I will say when I hopped on and I could hear you midstream of that, I was like, they're talking about the suit. I had little doubt. So you were in a pretty unique love triangle, quadrangle, possibly whatever it would be with Quinn triangle, because of, if we're counting the devil, I guess, as a separate entity. But you and your twin both have this thing going on with Chanel. What did you think when you found out that Johnny's twin sister was going to hook up with Chanel after Johnny as the devil dumped her?
Yeah. I hope I never, ever, 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 ever find myself in a situation like this. That would be terrible. But, you know, I think it's a fun storyline because it gives Lindsay and I a chance to kind of take little chips at each other here and there. And I think that's really fun. I think it really adds to the brother-sister relationship. Like I said, I like the dynamic that it creates between Lindsay and myself. And I think it's cool in that it's very unique. I don't think I've ever seen this in a show before. And it's just kind of, it's fun. It's just a fun storyline to play because it's so outlandish. And I think that's kind of been Day's MO, you know, that anything can happen in Salem, really, truly anything. And so I think continuing to push the envelope with this love triangle, as well as, you know, sexual fluidity, I think it's very, bold.
Agreed. Well, you already have gotten to do so much since you joined the show. How would you sum up your day's experience so far?
At risk of sounding not exciting, just great. I don't know if I have an awesome word for it, but just phenomenal, incredible, great, exciting, you know.
Good.
Those all work.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of Day's viewers, ourselves included, have been really impressed with your work and your portrayal thus far. What would you like to say to all of your new fans who are listening to this podcast?
Thank you. Thank you so much. It means the world to me that you, first of all, you know, don't fast forward through my scenes. That's a win in itself. But then to have you guys actually like it, it's even better. I appreciate every one of you. I hope to connect with each of you in some way, somehow down the line.
Well, Carson, this has been so much fun talking and just hearing about all of your fabulous stories and experiences so far. And we look forward to seeing what's up for you in 2022.
Yeah, me too. And thank you guys so much for having me on the show. I had an incredible time.
Well, thanks again, Carson. Have a great day.
Thank you. You too.
Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you to Carson Boatman for being our guest. If you like this podcast, please subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Be sure to pick up a new issue on sale now and come back next week for another podcast.